mukham karoti vachalam bhangum mangayate girim yat kripatam aham bande sri gurum dinadharanam. By the mercy of the spiritual master, even a blind man can see the stars in the sky. Even a lame man can cross mountains. And even a dumb man can speak eloquently. Since I have lost my voice, I pray for the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and all the assembled Vaishnavas that I'll be given some ability to serve you by speaking. Hare Krishna. It is a miracle in this material world. Samashita yepada palavaplavam mahatpadam punyaya shomurari bhavam budirvatsa padam 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 yadvipadam natesham. This is a place where there is danger at every step. It's a miracle that anybody survives moment after moment in this world. There's millions of ways in which we can be lamed, tortured, or killed at any second. Is there not? Knowing that there's danger at every step in this world, a devotee takes shelter of Krishna. Because in the mercy of the Lord, the vast ocean of material existence is reduced to the quantity of water contained in a hoofprint of a small cat. Even great scholars, ascetics, they cannot overcome the three modes of material nature. But Krishna tells, Daivi Heshu Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratraya Mame Vamye Prapajante Maya Metatirandita, that the three modes of material nature, which is being orchestrated by Maya, impossible to overcome. But one who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond it. How to surrender to Krishna? Could everyone hear? Did anyone not hear it nicely? Can someone resolve this crisis taking place in the back? There are nine processes of devotional service in which we can express our earnest desire to surrender to Krishna, beginning with hearing and chanting. Hearing Krishna's lila creates a taste for loving devotional service to the Lord. Hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord cleanses the heart or the mind of all the accumulated selfish, egoistic attachments that are the root cause of all suffering. Hearing about Krishna kills the apathy to hear about Krishna. just like rock candy. Rock candy or sugar candy is very bitter to one who has jaundice. Although actually it is very sweet. But if we just continue to taste it and tolerate the apparent bitterness, gradually we become purified of the disease. And then we can taste the nectar. So at the beginning, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord may be an austerity. Why? Because since time immemorial we have cultivated and conditioned the taste for hearing the topics of this mundane world. Prajalpa is such a powerful force. The whole world is speaking prajalpas. Except for in Vrindavan where all the birds and animals are singing about Krishna. Even the insects are speaking prajalpa. The birds are singing prajalpa. The dogs are barking prajalpa. The television stations, the radio stations, the internet, it's all prajalpa. In the 1970s, an achievement of technology was, what was it called? Telex. What is that?
Telex.
Huh? Before even fax. Telex. Whatever it was a way where you could somehow or other, in a very, very crude way, all the temples could communicate with one another. And they asked Srila Prabhupada, can we set this system up in our temples? And Prabhupada said, if you do, you will simply speak prajalpa. Well, I wonder what Prabhupada would think about the internet. It's a fact. The internet is nothing but prajalpa. On September 11th, yes? September 11th of 2001, when the World Trade Center was destroyed by terrorists. Very, very sad, unfortunate situation. So many lives were lost. But something very revealing took place also. I read that from the time the internet was first inaugurated, the number one keyword search, that means the number one word that everyone was searching information about, was sex. And in all the years of internet history, sex has always been number one. It never, ever, ever came below number five. Prajalpa. But after 9/11, the next day, sex was like number 150. Because when people take life a little bit seriously, they understand what prajalpa is about. There's a beautiful lecture where Srila Prabhupada is explaining how when you speak prajalpa, all your spiritual energy and your very spiritual life force is just draining out of your life. Just draining out of your heart. That is the effect of gossip. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he performed so many austerities to write his books so that we have something to talk about. So that we share this information, this knowledge with us. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, Machchita madgata prana bodhiyanta parasparam khatiyan paschamam nityam tushyanti charamanti cha. This is the quality of my sincere and genuine devotees. When they gather together, they take great satisfaction and bliss discussing amongst one another topics about Krishna. Rupa Goswami explains, one of the principles for a sincere devotee is not to waste a moment. Krishna has given us this power of speech, and as I'm experiencing, and Kasturba Prabhu has experienced, he could take it away in a second. This power of speech is not ours, it is God's. It is His property. And therefore it is sinful to use it for any other purpose than His will. Yes. If it is your power of speech, then you have any right to use it any way you want. But it's been given to you by the grace of God, and it can be taken away at any moment by the grace of God. Everything is Krishna's property. He is the ability of man. So to reciprocate with Krishna, we want to always speak about Krishna. We want to always hear about Krishna. And this eagerness to hear and chant the glories of the Lord is very pleasing to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada often emphasized the importance of enthusiasm, eagerness in everything we do in Krishna consciousness. Because that gives our devotional service life. Without an eagerness and enthusiasm, then whatever we do, whether it's hearing or chanting, it's more or less mechanical and ritualistic. What gives substance to our hearing, our chanting, and our service is our enthusiasm to please Guru, Vaishnavas, and Krishna in what we're doing. Maharaj Parikshit was sitting at Shukadeva Goswami's lotus feet. He only had 7 days to live. And by the time the 10th canto was being spoken, he only had a couple more days to go, till inevitable death would come upon him. But he was so enthusiastic to hear. He told Sukadeva Goswami that the Harikathamrita, the nectar of the pastimes of Lord Hari that is flowing from your mouth, is completely satisfying my heart. Although so many days has gone by and have not taken a drop of water or a morsel of food, I'm feeling no hunger or thirst. I'm fully satisfied just hearing this nectar from you. Previously, Maharaj Parikshit was in a forest, and he was thirsty. And you know what happened when he was thirsty? He lost his intelligence by the arrangement of the Lord. And he went to Samikrishi Prabhu's ashram, and he asked the sage for a little water. But Samigrishi Prabhu was in samadhi, meditating on Krishna. So he didn't hear him. But Maharaj Parikshit, whose life and soul was to honor, respect, and serve the great souls, how did he do such a crazy thing? With his tip of his bow, he put a dead snake like a garland around Samigrishi Prabhu's shoulder. And for that he was cursed to die in 7 days by Sringi, the son of the Brahman. So Maharaj Parikshit is marveling over this phenomena. A little bit of thirst, where he hadn't drunk water in just a few hours, and he was so much in distress. But here, it's been days and days and days with no food and no water, and he was completely fresh, completely enlivened and satisfied, just hearing the glories of Krishna and Krishna's holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
hearing the glories of Krishna produces attachment to Krishna, ashakti. And if we carry on hearing the glories of Krishna, our heart becomes further purified and it awakens rati or bhava. And by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord further into more purified states, it awakens prem or pure love. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains, and listen carefully. At the beginning, when we actually begin to develop a taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, we develop very intimate friendships with the devotees. That is a sign of the person who's actually making spiritual progress. That deep, heartfelt friendships are made amongst the devotees. And when we attain the state of praying, our beloved Acharya explains, at that time, from our heart awakens unconditional love for all living beings. Thakur Bhaktivinod explains that love of God, real affection in the heart toward Krishna, when it is directed toward the living beings of this world, it manifests as compassion. Compassion is an attribute of love. We may not have compassion. We may not have love. But the process of gaining this is described in the Bhagavatam. Srinvatam sukata krishna punya sravana kirtana Hridyantasto yabhadani vidunoti suritsitam. When we develop a real taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord is so pleased that within the heart, He eradicates all misconceptions, He annihilates all anarthas, and reveals Himself. But how to develop that taste? Shushushroshadanasya Vastu Devakataruchi Sian Mahatsevaya Vipra Punya Tirutana Sevana. By serving great souls, the affinity to hear about Krishna awakens within our heart. When Srila Prabhupada asked us to be instruments of His compassion, by serving His will, by serving His devotees, that was the mercy that He gave us in which we can attain the highest ultimate perfection of life. Maharaj Parikshit was very, very eager to hear about how Krishna appeared within this world. Sukadeva Goswami explains, and also Padma Purana and our Acharyas explain from other points of view, to create a fuller and fuller picture. I'd like to speak briefly on this subject and this some little particle from the ocean of subjects of the place we are in today. We have come to Mahavan, or Gokula, the eternal abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whenever Krishna appears within this world, He appears in Mathura and Gokula. Actually, Krishna is eternally existing within Gokul. He doesn't, in one sense, He descends. Yes? when Lord Brahma was with the demigods on the shore of the ocean of milk, Kshirasagar, he heard a voice. It was the voice of Lord Narayan, that I am soon coming to incarnate within this world and tell the devatas that they should incarnate as their planetary expansions within the Yadu dynasty. It was a desperate condition that brought the demigods to the shore of the ocean of milk. Kamsa and other asuras, Jarasandha, were just plundering the earth. And the earth was so much in distress that she appeared in the form of a cow, weeping tears, and cried for Brahma for help. So Lord Brahma proclaimed to the demigods the Lord's will. So Chirodakshai Vishnu descends. But actually, Krishna is always living in Vrindavan, in his aprakata, in his eternal lila, that it cannot be experienced through mundane senses. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. Only when our eyes are ornamented with the decoration of love can we see Krishna as he is. The scriptures and the acharyas explain that Krishna's astakalya lila, his pastimes, are always taking place in Vrindavan. But when Krishna performs his prakata lila, his manifested pastimes, people could see. And what he performed in his lila is written so we could hear about it. And thus he establishes his presence for the conditioned souls to remember him and become purified. So actually, when Krishna descends, he merges into his original form that's already here in Vrindavan. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. In the Yadu dynasty, there was a great king named Devamidha. He had two sons, one from a Vaishya wife and one from a Chachiya wife. From Chachiya wife, his son was Surasena. And he gave birth to Vasudeva. From the Vaishya wife, he gave birth to Parajanya. Parjanya was given the area of Mahaban to be the ruling king of the cowherd men and cowherd ladies. This was the abode of Parjanya. Mahaban and Vrindavan. He had five sons: Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sunanda, and Nandan. When Vasudev was married to Devaki, on that very night, Kamsa, who was his loving brother-in-law, wanted to please his sister by taking her to her husband's home by driving chariot, taking a menial position of her servant, just to satisfy his loving sister. But then the demigod spoke from the sky. Kamsa, you are a fool. The eighth child of your sister will be the cause of your death. So much for his loving sentiments. With his left hand, he grabbed her hair. With his right hand, he drew his sword, and he was about to sever her head. Hare Krishna. Meanwhile, Vasudeva was pleading. Oh, Kamsa, you're the pride of your entire dynasty. You have such a great reputation. Everyone reveres you. You will totally lose your reputation. How can you act in such a way to kill your own sister? He spoke nice philosophy. Because the Bhagavatam says that it is the duty of every human being to try to protect his life or her life as far as possible within proper principles of morality and integrity. That death is certain for everyone. The real thing is how we live. If you cause this cruel deed to your sister, you're going to have to suffer hellish consequences. Don't you know you're not this body, you're the eternal soul? Why do you want to subject your soul to such condemnation? But Kamsa could not hear philosophy because he was envious. So Dasudev pleaded, "I'll give you every one of my sons and you can deal with them. There is no danger from Devaki." So Kamsa agreed. And he killed one after another 6 children. Hare Krishna. Meanwhile, one of Vasudeva's wives, Rohini, was sent to Mahaban to be under the care of Nanda Maharaj, because Vasudeva and Nanda Maharaj were the best of friends. And she lived very happily, like in intimacy, like a sister of Yashoda Mai, the queen of Braj. Rohini is eternally the son of Rohini. I mean, Balaram. Balaramji is eternally the son of Rohini. But by Krishna's will, he entered into the womb of Devaki in the mood of Shesha. Because already the 6 Garbha Suras, 6 demons were already killed from the womb of Devaki. And it is described that these 6 Asuras represent lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, and illusion. Before Krishna manifests in our heart, first we have to kill these demons within us. Krishna is in our heart, but he will not manifest till all these demons are slain. And how are they slain? Prabhupada explains that Kamsa represents fear of material existence, and Devaki represents devotion and a sincere devotee. When a devotee is very serious and take shelter of Krishna, knowing the dangers of material existence, then the anartas of the heart are destroyed. In other words, we can't take devotional service as something very light or something very mild. We must be very serious about it. There's danger at every step. When a devotee is fearless, they may be fearless because to serve the Lord, they're willing to give up their body, they're willing to give up their possessions, they're willing to give up their prestige. But devotees fear forgetting Krishna. They have a healthy fear of Maya because they know she's all-powerful. If you don't fear Maya, unless you're a Paramahamsa, you will not attentively and strictly chant at least 16 rounds every day. Yes? Srila Prabhupada said that if you're not chanting at least 16 rounds attentively every day, at any moment you will become victim to Maya. And And even Krishna arranged for Lord Brahma to appear to be a victim of Maya. It is our position. So we should fear Maya. But that fear of Maya shouldn't bring us distress. Like a little baby, when a baby is in a fearful situation, what does the baby do? Immediately takes shelter and loudly cries out for its mother. So in this way, by taking shelter of Krishna in the spirit of devotion, having fear of the power of Maya, to never let go of Krishna's mercy, to never let go of the association of devotees who are saving us at every moment, we become purified. And Balaram entered to prepare the heart of Devaki perfectly. He is the original guru. That is the guru's position. To arrange the heart of a disciple for the appearance of God. And he also, like Shesha, he created a sitting place and a nice bed and everything within the womb of Devaki for Krishna to reside. But one night at midnight, Rohini, who was in Mahavan, she was also pregnant with a child. She had a dream that she had a miscarriage. And then she woke up and she saw that she actually did. Then Yogamaya spoke to her and said, "The child that was in your womb has been transferred." And Balaram, and then Balaram entered into her womb. Actually, the original Balaram. So it was here in Gokul Mahavan, where we're sitting, that Sri Balaramji was born to Rohini within this material world. Sri Balaramji ki. On Krishna's order, Yogamaya transferred Balaram from Devaki's womb to Rohini's. Then Krishna entered into the mind of Vasudeva and was transferred to the heart of Devaki. And she became effulgent. And even the demigods were offering her prayers. Meanwhile, in Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj had such good qualities. Everyone loved him so much that although Upananda was the eldest son, he was meant to be the next king. And Parjanya wanted to renounce all of his responsibilities and just completely immerse himself in bhakti. So he offered the kingship of Mahavan to Upananda. But Upananda felt in his heart that Nanda Maharaj, he has such glorious qualities. Everyone loves him so much. I want him to be king. We see in this world elections, how people are fighting for kingship. And blaspheming each other like anything, trying to get that position. People are willing to hold on to their position to the fag end of their life. Yes? But in Vrindavan, nobody's concerned with position. Uddhava, greatest of the devotees of Dwarka, he wanted to be a lump of grass, a little creeper, on the ground, where everyone would step on his head and give dust. That is Uddhava. Brahma and Shiva, They are praying to become mountains so everyone will step on their heads and they'll get dust. So Vrindavan is not a place where people want position or power. Vrindavan is a place where people simply want to serve. So Upananda and Nanda Maharaj was embarrassed, but everyone said, no, no, you be our king, you be our king. And his older brother was saying, please, you be our king. So Nanda Maharaj surrendered to the will of the Brijabasis and became Brajendra. But he had no child. Although there was another Gopa named Samukha, and he married his daughter, Yashoda, to Nanda Maharaj. Yashoda means one who gives fame and glory. It was the only sorrow of all the Brijabasis that Nanda and Yashoda had no child. But here in Mahavan, both Nanda and Yashoda would regularly have simultaneously a dream where this beautiful child that absolutely enchanted their hearts would appear. And they fell in love with this child with such motherly and fatherly devotion. They just wanted to be the mother and father of this child, but the child was only in a dream. And they could never be satisfied with any other child once seeing this child. So the Brijabasis were performing all yajnas and everything to try to get the demigods and the Supreme Lord Narayan to give them child. But Nanda and Yashoda, they wanted that child. So they did a Dwadasi fast together. And Lord Narayan appeared to them simultaneously in their hearts and revealed that that child that has stolen your heart will soon become your own son. So they were very happy. And just after that, Yashodamayi became pregnant. What happened is this. Krishna entered into her heart, and his younger sister, Yogamaya, entered into her womb. And at midnight, at the time that we celebrate Janamashtami, Krishna appeared from the womb of Devaki in the prison cell of Kamsa in Mathura in a majestic form with a crown and Kostubamani and holding a conchal and a lotus flower and the Sudarshan chakra and conchal. And Vasudeva and Devaki were understanding that God Almighty has become our son, and they offered very nice prayers. But Yashodamai still had parental affection for God Almighty, Narayan. So Yashoda asked in her motherly concern, if Kamsa sees you like this, he'll know you are the enemy that has been prophesied, and he might hurt you. So please disguise yourself as the ordinary baby. That was her love. Meanwhile, right here in Mahavan, Yashodamai gave birth to a son and a daughter, Krishna and Yogamaya. But by Yogamaya's potency, she was so tired that she fell asleep and forgot everything. So Nanda Maharaj, he was told by Lord Krishna to take him across Yamuna and exchange him with the daughter of Yashoda. So as he was crossing Yamuna, after all the guards fell asleep and the chains on their legs just
immediately opened up, and all the doors opened up. He left. And as he was passing through Yamuna, Prabhupada explains that Krishna slipped from his hands and fell in Yamuna, because Yamuna Mayi was longing and longing to do some seva for Krishna. And then he brought her up, brought Krishna up. And it is explained, different commentators have different explanations in detail of exactly. Some say that actually this Krishna that was brought merged into Krishna in Mahaban. Some say merged in, the two merged into one in Mathura. But when that little innocent childish baby, Krishna, the Vasudev Krishna that was born of Vasudev, merged into the original form of Gopal, the son of Nanda and Yashoda. So thus, according to Srila Prabhupada and all of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, Krishna was born here in Gokul Mahavan. Vasudev brought Yogamaya back to Mathura. And she cried. And as soon as she cried, everybody woke up. And then Kamsa came running down, and Devaki was saying, no, please don't. This is my only child. She's a daughter. She won't hurt you. Please let me have one child. Just one child, please. Kamsa was so cruel. Although his sister was just helplessly crying, piteously. He just pulled the little helpless infant baby out of her hands and went to dash her against a stone to crush her head. But she slipped out of his hands and went into the sky and manifested her form of Durga with many weapons and told Kamsa that you are a great fool. The child you are fearing has already been born somewhere else. And then she disappeared. But it is explained, Yogamaya was born to Yashoda. But when she came to Mathura, when she crossed the Yamuna and came into Mathura, the original Yogamaya expanded herself as Mahamaya. Because Kamsa cannot touch Yogamaya. Yogamaya is the personification of pure, of Prem. It is the energy that facilitates all intimate, ecstatic, loving relationships in the spiritual world. How could Kamsa possibly have any contact with Yogamaya? Yogamaya bewilders a devotee to increase their love and the intimacy of their affection for Krishna. Mahamaya bewilders the soul to forget Krishna and be completely immersed in the concept that I am this body and I am this mind. So Mahamaya told Kamsa his destiny, that the child that is to kill you has already been born. Kamsa became very sobered by this incident. And he fell at the feet of Devaki and Vasudev and begged forgiveness. Can you imagine? What a nonsense rascal. His own sister and brother-in-law, he's kept him in prison for years. He's murdered right in front of their eyes, six of their infant children. One escaped in the form of a miscarriage, Balaram. At least it appeared that way. And he was about to kill this little girl, even though Devaki was pleading. And now he's begging forgiveness. And he's saying, actually, everything happens by one's karma, so please. Please forgive me. And Vasudeva and Devaki were such saints that they forgave him. He said, oh, actually, what you're saying is correct. It was all meant to be. You are forgiven.
And they very affectionately and graciously were kind to him and even gave him solace and spoke very kind words to pacify his heart. That is Vaishnava. But meanwhile, here in Mahavan, where we sit today, when Yashoda Mai woke up, the first thing she saw was the beautiful moon-like face of Gopal, his loving lotus eyes, his complexion like a blue lotus, his every limb which more enchanting than anything in all of existence. So soft, so delicate. The reservoir of sweet beauty. Yashoda Mai just looked at his face and wept incessant tears of love. The other ladies, gopis, they all gathered around. And practically speechlessly immersed in such enchantment, they could not stop gazing upon Yashoda Nandan. And they sent a Brahmin's wife, Brahmani, to give the news to Nanda Maharaj. By this time, it was early morning. And what do the gopas do in the early morning? They have no need for sadhana. They're beyond that. 24 hours a day, their pure loving devotional service is beyond all sadhana. You cannot imitate that. We rise early in the morning and we offer obeisances and chant our rounds and go to Mangalarti and so many study the scriptures. But they rise and milk the cows. And it's so nice today that we're having this katha in this goshala. Where you're all sitting is 24 hours a day the place where cows are eating and resting and giving milk. Gokul, the land of cows. And we are sitting in the very place where the cows are kept. In fact, the cows are so merciful. When we came, they all moved aside. But they left behind the dust. When Krishna was a cowherd boy, this was one of his most beautiful ornaments. His beautiful body would be covered by the dust that was raised from the hooves of the cows and the calves. So they were milking cows. And the Brahmani came. And when Nanda and Upananda and the other cowherd men saw her, she was trying to tell them something, but she was in so much ecstasy, she could not speak. She was just trembling, and she was just so happy. She was the personification of joy. She didn't have to say anything. They understood. The only thing that could bring a Vrijavasi this kind of joy is Yashoda has given birth. And then finally she came, she had the ability to give the news. And Nanda Maharaj was so happy with this news, he gave her thousands and thousands of cows and silks and gold and everything just because she gave him that news that his son was born. And he was in so much ecstasy. He was weeping, he was crying, he was trembling, he was trying to get to the place where Krishna was, but he kept falling down and getting up and falling down and getting up and falling down and getting up and falling down and getting up. And he went home and he took his bath and he put on nice clothes and he came.
And there he had the first sight of Krishna, Gopal, in the arms of Yashoda Maya. And Rohini and the other gopis were singing beautiful songs in love, gave the child to Nanda Maharaj to embrace. Nanda Maharaj was so happy, he declared, there will be a festival, Nandotsava. And here, this particular temple that we are at is the place of the house of Nanda Maharaj. There are 84 pillars. And some of the original pillars, it is said, are still in this temple. And it is in this house Krishna performed unlimited childhood pastimes. Krishna lived here in Gokul Mahaban for 3 years and 4 months before going to Vrindavan forest. The whole of Mahavan, the whole of Braj, was in such exuberant happiness that they all wore the best clothes that they have. Ladies were wearing their nicest saris and putting on beautiful ornaments, and the men were putting on their nice colored turbans. Even Rohini, it is explained that according to tradition, when a woman's husband is not at home, she dresses very simple. But on this day, to rejoice the birth of Krishna, the son of Nanda and Yashoda, she dressed elegantly. And they all came running from all directions, just like rivers coming in all directions, to the house of Nanda Maharaj, all to gaze upon the beauty of Gopal. There were Brahmins performing yajnas to invoke auspiciousness. There was other Brahmins who were chanting Vedic mantras. Vrijabhasi gopas and gopis were composing songs about the beauty of Gopal and about the wonderful qualities of Nanda and Yashoda. And they were singing these wonderful songs, and everyone was singing and dancing, and they brought Krishna and put him on a beautiful altar and performed Abhishekam with Panchagavya and Panchamrita and all auspicious articles as conch shells were being blown and wonderful Vedic instruments were being played. Everyone was dancing and singing, rejoicing, seeing the beauty, the sweetness of Gopal. They were so happy in celebrating. Nanda Maharaj, his wealth was in his yogurt and ghee and butter and milk products. So he gave so much that all the thousands and thousands and thousands of Vrijabhasis were very lovingly throwing yogurt and butter upon each other. It's an exchange of love. In this way, Krishna, on the very day that he appeared to the eyes of the Vrijabhasis, completely stole their hearts. From that day here in Gokul Mahaban, everyone lived exclusively for Krishna's pleasure. Their bodies, minds, words, and lives were 24 hours a day offerings for Krishna. That is the spontaneous nature of pure love. To the degree love awakens within our heart, there is a spirit of selfless servitude, being willing to sacrifice anything and everything for the happiness of the object of our love. That is love. And Krishna is the supreme object of everyone's love. But here in Gokul, Krishna manifests the highest, sweetest, perfection of that love in the hearts of his devotees.
Just a couple days after Krishna's appearance, Nanda Maharaj was given the news that he had to go to Mathura with the other senior gopas to pay his taxes to the king, Kamsa. So he left. Meanwhile, Kamsa, who was so evil, so demoniac, due to bad association, and also Narada Muni, good association, he understood that actually any of these children could be Krishna. I mean, any child anywhere could be the person who is coming to kill me. So he was sending various demons to kill all children. And one of them, horrible, cruel-hearted witch named Putana. Prabhupada explains she is a particular type of witch called Kechari. Not Kichari, but Kechari. And Prabhupada said, even in northern provinces of India, there are still Kechari witches, and you can see them flying on uprooted branches of trees in the sky. Hare Krishna. But she was so powerful, she could transform herself in any way she wanted. She was a gruesome rakshasi. The Haribamsa explains that Putana took the form of a bird and flew into Vrindavan, Gokul, and then manifested the form of a most beautiful woman. This Putana had already slaughtered and drank the blood of thousands and thousands of helpless babies. And now she wanted to kill the son of Nanda. Yes, she came in a very... She came to Vrindavan in a way that nobody even noticed she arrived. And then she assumed this form, which was so beautiful that when the Brijabasis saw her, they were thinking, we have attained such good fortune. Is she a heavenly damsel? Or perhaps she's the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, who has appeared with her lotus flower in her hand just to bless the son of Nanda Maharaj. This was their thinking. She came right here and walked right into Nanda Maharaj's house. And Rohini and Devaki, Rohini and Yashoda, were taking care of Krishna in their arms. They put him down to greet her. They had so much faith in her, because she was glancing upon them so sweetly, that they felt it was a great honor and blessing that she was picking up Gopal. She looked at Gopal and saw his beauty. And in her heart of hearts, she knew that for her, he was death personified. And Gopal looked at her and closed his eyes. Because the first demon he was to kill was a woman. And you're not supposed to kill women. But it's interesting because the first demon Ram killed was also a woman. And he wasn't supposed to kill women either. But this shows how demoniac these people are. That the Lord is willing to even cross over
all conventions that he and all other living beings must observe to protect women. He closed his eyes. Also, he closed his eyes because he knew that she was the murderess of countless children. When she looked at Krishna, she didn't realize. She thought he was a rope, but actually she was picking up the snake of death. Rivo. And although her heart was fierce and cruel, she disguised herself in such a beautiful way that she was like a sharp, dangerous sword in a beautiful, ornamented sheath. She lifted Krishna, and everyone was so happy to see this. And in front of everybody's eyes, she placed her breast in baby Gopal's mouth. She had already smeared her breast with terrible, deadly poison, enough to kill thousands of grown men. And she placed that breast in little baby Gopal's mouth. And the first thing Gopal did was, with his little hands, his fingers were only like this. You've seen 2-3-year-old babies' fingers. You mothers have seen brahmacharis. I don't know if you look at those things. But they're the most delicate things in the 14 worlds, a baby's fingers, yes. Gaurangi Devi, you have seen. There's nothing more delicate than an infant child's fingers. Those little fingers of Gopal's, softer than the petals of a flower. They squeezed Putana. Oh, it caused her too much pain. He squeezed. And as he was squeezing, he started sucking. And he squeezed so hard and sucked so deep that Putana was in horrible, terrible pain. First Krishna sucked out all the poison, then he sucked some milk, then he was sucking out her very life force, and he was squeezing in such a way that it was unbearable for her. She couldn't tolerate it. She just started screaming, and she ran outside the house and ran into the pasture ground, and she was just crying out, "Child, leave me, leave me, leave me." And with all of her force, she was trying to take Krishna off, but Krishna just kept squeezing and sucking. And she lost so much of her power. She couldn't any longer maintain her disguise. All of a sudden, she just manifested her original form, which was 12 miles in size. Now, a jet airplane only flies about 8 miles high. And Krishna did not expand himself. Can you imagine Putana in her enormous size and Krishna squeezing? He was still squeezing. Like a little insect on her, he was still squeezing. And she was trying, with all of her force, she was trying to pull him off, and he was just squeezing and squeezing and sucking and sucking, and she was pulling, she was, "Child, leave me!" She was screaming. When she screamed, the whole 14 worlds were shaking. The Brijabasis were terrified hearing this scream, this roar. And ultimately, Gopal sucked out her very life, and Putana fell to the ground and destroyed trees up to 12 miles away. But by Krishna's arrangement, Krishna is so expert, he can fulfill so many of his purposes in any one act. Krishna caused Putana to fall in a direction that she totally destroyed Kamsa's favorite garden. He spent so much time growing these big trees for so many years, and it was his pleasure grove, and Putana and she was laying there. And Krishna was crawling on her breast. It was like a mountain. He was just crawling. He was playing. He was very smiling and playing. And the gopis were running. They had to run to try to find Krishna. And Putana's body, it says her thighs were like riverbanks. Her fingers were like massive bridges. Her teeth were like gigantic plows. Her eyes were like sunken wells. Her belly was like a dried up lake. Horrible, beastly, massive creature was laying there. And Krishna was playing and smiling and laughing. So the gopis ran, and they brought Krishna down and put him in the arms of Yashoda Mai. And then the gopis began to perform many different rituals to protect Krishna from future danger. But they could not believe that it was Krishna that killed Putana. They were thinking, because Lord Narayan always protects innocent, helpless children, it is the Lord that has caused her death. Because she is so cruel, it was her own karma that caused her death. But by Lord Narayan's mercy, our Gopal has been protected. When Nanda Maharaj returned home and saw Putana laying in the pastures, what is this? And then when he found out that she tried to kill Krishna, he was astonished. The gopas were afraid that Putana might come back to life, so they chopped her body up and started big fires and burnt her. Harivo. That's what sometimes Brijavasis do with snakes. Yes, you have heard. Sometimes when you kill a snake, the snake can come back alive, so they burn. Oh, in this way, they burnt her body. But because her body was touched by Krishna, the smoke that emanated from her body was so sweet, it was intoxicating like a guru. One of the scents that we worship the Lord with during puja. Putana represents the pseudo guru, the false guru. When Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he identified so many false gurus. And actually nobody knew the difference between anything. Yes? When Prabhupada came to the West, anybody that came from India who had long hair was a guru. Especially if he could say a couple words in Sanskrit, or he could close his eyes and look peaceful. Yes. So there were so many. And so many thousands and thousands of people were taking lessons and teachings and giving money and so many things. Because they didn't know. Prabhupada shocked people. When he would say, he is a cheater. He is a rascal. What do you mean? He has long hair. He has a beard. How could he be a cheater and rascal? He's speaking nice things. He's talking about how I'm God and you're God and we're all God and shanti, shanti, we can be peaceful. Rascal. Cheater. Yes? The Because when you put your faith in someone, if that person is not giving you the proper milk, he may be giving you poison. And yes, so many of these gurus. And when Prabhupada came to India, he was even stronger about this. So many are Mayavadis. So many are teaching that you will become God. That ultimately you are the supreme controller, you are the supreme enjoyer. That ultimately God is formless. And this knowledge poisons the propensity for devotional service. So we must be very careful. Evam parampara praptam. Therefore, real knowledge can be understood to be perfect when it is coming through parampara. Then we're getting the real nourishing milk of transcendental wisdom. Otherwise, people take knowledge from Vedas, which is like milk, but when they give their own interpretations, it's like putting poison in that milk. And it could cause a great disturbance to our inclination for devotional service. So Putana represents that. When we put faith in someone, they have the greatest capacity to cheat us and cause us pain. Srila Prabhupada said, my only qualification is I'm simply giving what my Guru Maharaj and the great Acharyas have given, as it is. Humble servant. Nanda Maharaj was so happy to see that Krishna was safe. He inspected all of his limbs to see if there was any injuries, and then he embraced little Krishna and smelled his head and wept tears of love. When Krishna was 3 months old, there is a ceremony that was performed here in Gokul Mahavan called Uttana. Uttana is the time when the Lord first begins to slant himself from his bed. It's actually the beginning stages of a child's crawling. Yes. Well, Srila Prabhupada explains that in Vedic culture, the raising of a child was such a beautiful thing that there were ceremonies for every stage of a child's development. Not only ceremonies, but festivals. Nanda and Yashoda had a festival because Krishna just started to slant and he was about to start crawling. So they had Brahmins chanting mantras and people were doing yajnas and the Vrijavasis were singing and chanting and they did Abhishekam for Krishna and there were so many guests and so many Brahmins coming to Nanda and Yashoda's house to celebrate Uttana that Krishna's going to soon crawl. So Yashoda Mai, she wanted to receive all the guests that were coming to her house. So she entered into a courtyard. And there was a hand-driven cart. And Yashoda Mai laid down with Krishna under the cart. Prabhupada said, this is the motherly love of Yashoda Mai. She knew that Krishna would sleep nicely if he felt protected by his mother. So whenever Yashoda Mai would put Krishna to sleep, she would lay down with him in her embrace until he fell asleep. Then she would leave him there and go to her duties. That was her love. So she was receiving Brahmins, and Krishna was under this big cart. On top of the cart were so many heavy materials of wares, pots, and so many other things. Little Gopal woke up. When he opened his eyes, he felt thirsty for the love of his mother in the form of her milk. So he cried. But Yashoda Mai was taking care of the Brahmins, and there was instruments being played, and everyone was singing, so she did not hear Krishna's cry. So Krishna wanted to get Yashoda Mai's attention. Do you remember what he did? With his little tiny foot, 3-month foot. That little foot, he just, he kicked the wheel of the cart. Krishna Bhagavan ki! Tumultuous sound, not like mine. All the wheel of the cart separated from the axle of the cart, and all the spokes broke, and the wheel went flying, and the whole cart fell to the ground, and all the wares fell. Very loud sound. And the bridge, when the Brijavasis heard this, Nanda Yashoda, they all came running to the scene. What happened? What happened? And right amidst this big mess was little Gopal, not even able to crawl yet. How Krishna did this is incredible. Krishna's lotus foot was softer and more tender than a new-grown leaf of a tamal tree. And the cart was very hard, wooden steel. Krishna just touched it. The cart was actually a demon of the name Sakatasura, who was a demon who, due to his sins, was in the body of a ghost. And he entered into that cart to kill Krishna. Krishna didn't show any extraordinary opulence. You know, Vamanadeva, when he wanted to cover the planetary systems, he expanded himself as Trivikram so that his one step could be so gigantic to fulfill his purpose. And Narasimhadeva also, when Vishnu wanted to kill Hiranyakashipu, to fulfill the purpose of killing this Hiranyakashipu, he became Sri Narasimha Bhagavan with razor sharp hard nails to tear him apart. But Krishna didn't exhibit any opulences. He just remained the same little baby Gopal. He didn't need to change, because Gopal is the original source of all avatars. And he didn't want to disturb the Brijavasis' love for him by showing any great opulences. He did everything just like a sweet, helpless little baby. Sakatasura was killed by Krishna with absolutely no exertion. The gopas and gopis were struck with wonder. How is this possible? How is this possible? And the little children who were gathered around, they saw everything. They say, we saw what happened. Little Gopal cried for milk, but Mother Yashoda didn't come, so he kicked the cart with his little foot, and it all broke up. And the gopas and gopis said, how can we listen to little children? This is all impossible. They didn't believe it. And Krishna was crying, because he still wanted that milk. He was still crying. So Mother Yashoda picked him up and fed him milk. And it is said, when a child drinks the milk of his mother in a very enthusiastic way, that's the sign that he's in good health and he's protected. It's very auspicious. Something for you mothers to understand nicely. Of course, I'm sure you already know these things. So Nanda Maharaj called the Brahmins who he trusted so much and had them do yajnas and chant mantras, and he gave profuse charity to them for the future protection of Gopal. Sakatasura represents carrying the load of old and new bad habits.
Sometimes when we come to Krishna consciousness, especially at the beginning, there's a great enthusiasm because it's so new and it's so different and it's so wonderful and it's so exciting. But then after some time, some of those old bad habits that we haven't yet purified from our heart come back to haunt us, like the ghost of Sakatasura. Sakatasura's ghost. You can't see ghost. Some people can, but most people cannot see ghosts. So similarly, our old habits for material enjoyment are like ghosts that want to haunt us, infatuate us, and kill our Krishna consciousness, kill Krishna within our heart. Srila Prabhupada even explained that generally, when a devotee, no matter how long that devotee is in Krishna consciousness, if they leave the path of bhakti, they usually go back to doing the same things they did before they became devotees. That means the ghost of these bad habits are still there, coming to haunt us and take us away from Krishna. The old songs we used to like to listen to. Sometimes like ghosts, they just start haunting our minds, yes? And enticing us. Or the old television shows, or the old friends, or the old sentimental relations. Old bad habits. And we know what habit is. Habit is something that's very difficult to give up. A person is addicted to smoking or addicted to drinking or addicted to drugs. There's all these anonymous organizations. People are addicted to sex. People are addicted to gambling. So many addictions. And even if you try to give it up, it's very, very, very difficult because we've conditioned ourselves to depend on these things for a mental or physical state of peace or happiness. That's a problem. The more you find happiness in anything in this material world or anyone, you condition yourself to be dependent on that thing or that person for your happiness. You become addicted to it. It's very hard to give up. And even advanced devotees, if they have any traces of desires, those habits are still there. And until we're very, very advanced devotees, those habits can come by and haunt us. Like a burden, these old and new habits that we have, bad habits, are like the burden of all the utensils on the cart of Sakatasura within our heart. And they're just waiting to just crash down on us and destroy our bhakti.
Hare Krishna.
So Prabhupada explained that the only way we can stay out of Maya is we have to replace it with Krishna. And that means we have to be engaged. Prabhupada said, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. The idle mind is Sakatasura's workshop. He was a devil. As soon as our mind is idle, then all the conditionings and the habits of the past start coming back, like a ghost to haunt us. Therefore, we should be very enthusiastic and very careful to always be engaged in some positive devotional service. Prabhupada said we have to be busy for Krishna. Satatam kirtayanto mam. And most of all, we have to learn at every moment to not only be busy for Krishna, but to take shelter
of the holy name of
Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
One of the greatest bad habits is lethargy, laziness for Krishna consciousness, or false pride. So everybody, let's fight against this lethargy and with great enthusiasm loudly chant the holy name. It was around that time that Garga Muni came to Mahavan Gokul. Vasudev sent him because he was really concerned about Krishna and Balaram. He wanted him to get them to get the blessings of this great sage. When Garga Rishi approached Nanda Maharaj's house, Nanda Maharaj welcomed him with so much respect and honor because he was a Brahmin and a sage. He said, "Sages like you come to the house of householders because we are naturally very much affected and diverted by so many worldly considerations in our life. But you come just to remind us of the real goal and purpose of life. You take the guise of a beggar just to come into our house, but actually you're not coming to take anything. You're really coming to give us something, the most precious of all wealth, wisdom." It was decided Garga Muni wanted to do the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram. But the problem was, if they did it like all other festivals, Kamsa may hear about it. So they decided to do a very secret name-giving ceremony in the Goshala, the place where the cows were kept. And there Garga Muni revealed that this child, because he is bringing together the dynasties of the Brishnis and the Yadus, his name should be Shankarshan. And because in the future he will take great pleasure in exhibiting supernatural strength, his name will be Baladev or Balaram. And this child, he has appeared in this world in many ways. He comes to annihilate the miscreants, re-establish the principles of religion, and protect the devotees. He has appeared in a white form in Satya Yuga. He has appeared in a red form in Treta Yuga. He has appeared in previous Kali Yugas in a golden form. And now he has appeared in this beautiful dark bluish form. This child, he will have powers like that of Lord Narayan. And he will always protect all the Brijabasis from all dangers. Please take nice care of him. When Krishna, should I continue? Do you like this place? This is true opulence. Materialistic people, when they want to have a conference, they rent out a ballroom in a 5-star hotel in downtown Bombay, Oberoi or Marriott or Taj Mahal, yes? And they have nice seats and marble floors and beautiful golden gold leaf ceiling ornaments, chandeliers, yes? And they think that's opulence. But this is opulence. sitting under the Kadamba, or sitting under the Kalpavriksha trees of Braj, breathing and laying in the sacred dust of Vrindavan. And please understand the nature of this dust. There has been tons of cow dung and cow urine merging into the dust. Very sanctified, very pure. We have seen these cows, they eat the grass and they pass the dung. And cow dung is very sacred, very pure. Prabhupada said it is antiseptic. In fact, they would bathe, the Vrijavasis would bathe Krishna and Balaram with cow dung and cow urine. That is how pure. And they pick it up and they make patties and they cook with it. Prabhupada said, first class fuel for cooking is cow dung. First class. Second class is wood. Third class is gas. And fourth class is electricity. But cow dung is the topmost cooking fuel. It actually smells sweet. Have you ever? That is sweet. And it makes mosquitoes go away also. So this is opulence. Sitting in the cow dung, the cow urine, and the dust of Vrindavan under the trees. And if you're attached to the Oberoi or Taj Mahal, then if you do purify your heart, you may go to Vaikuntha. Unless you develop a taste for rolling in the dust of Vrindavan, you will not understand what the highest happiness could be. So, when Krishna in his first year, one day, Yashoda Mai had Krishna on her lap, and she wanted to make Krishna have nice fun. So she was lifting Krishna up and throwing him up in the air. Have you ever seen mothers do like that? She was just little baby Krishna. She was just lifting and throwing. She was laughing and smiling, and the gopis were watching, and they were laughing and smiling, and Krishna was laughing and smiling. But then Krishna was thinking that my mother, she can only lift me a little bit, but I want to play in the sky. My mother can only lift me a little bit, but I want to play in the sky. And he knew that there was a demon sent by Kamsa named Trinabharta, who explicitly wanted to kill Yashoda and Krishna. So Krishna did not want Yashoda to be implicated in this painful situation. So he became very heavy, like a mountain. Yashoda Mai, what's happening? This was too much for her. All of a sudden, her little baby, who she's lifting up, has become so heavy she can't even hold him anymore. So she sets him down, and she calls the Brahmins to come and chant mantras. And because she didn't know what else to do, she focused her mind in remembering Lord Narayan. Krishna was sitting on the ground of Braj when the mighty Asura, Trinabharta, came on the order of Kamsa. He was really powerful and deadly. He manifested the form of a whirlwind. And his blowing made such a roaring sound that it deafened everyone's ears. He was blowing a wind with such force that the dust rose from the sky and made the entire Gokul black with dust. Nobody could even see the hand in front of their face. And Yashoda Mai, her only concern was Gopal. She was running and looking for Gopal, but she couldn't see anything. She was crying out, "Gopal, Gopal, 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 where are you, Gopal?" But she couldn't see anything. The winds were blowing. Trees were falling down. Massive roar. And she can't find Gopal anywhere. Helplessly, she fell unconscious to the ground like a cow that had just lost her calf. Meanwhile, Krishna, by his Aishwarya Shakti, became lighter than the lightest, just to facilitate Trinavarta's plan. Trinavarta picked up little Gopal and went higher and higher and higher and higher and higher into the sky. As he was going higher and higher into the sky, the dust cleared. Krishna was way, way up, practically in Swargaloka. And Yashoda Mai, there was no Krishna anywhere. So she was just laying on the ground, piteously crying, and all the gopis were just gathered around her, weeping and crying, and loudly chanting Krishna's pastimes, and somehow or other tried to pacify her. But ultimately, they were all feeling so much separation, they could only cry. They were helpless. Their life was taken from them. Meanwhile, Krishna was enjoying the ride. After he fulfilled his desire of playing into the sky, and he fulfilled the ladies of the Swargaloka's desire to see him, he assumed the weight of a massive mountain. He was so heavy that Trinavarta could no longer go any higher. And then Krishna accepted the role of an ordinary little boy. Are you all awake? Krishna looked down, and he was so high in the sky that he became afraid. So he grasped on to Trinavarta's neck and squeezed it real hard because he was afraid of falling. And as he was squeezing Trinavarta's neck, he was choking the demon, and the demon with all of his might, with his hands, was trying to pull Krishna off, and Krishna was just looking down, and he was squeezing his neck, squeezing his neck, and squeezing his neck. He squeezed it so much that Trinavarta's eyes popped out. He couldn't breathe. He was trembling, he was perspiring, and ultimately Krishna blocked his air and choked him to death. And Trinavarta fell way, 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 way down and crashed onto a slab of stone, and all of his limbs were dislocated. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai! When the gopis saw Krishna laying on Trinavarta's obliterated body, they became very much afraid. But Krishna was just joyfully smiling and laughing and playing. The gopis were amazed. They came to the conclusion that Trinavarta was killed by his own sins. And Narayan saved our little Krishna. Why? They were speculating amongst themselves. Maybe it's because of our pious deeds. Or maybe it's because of our austerities. Or maybe it's because we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the power of Yoga Maya would not allow them to even conceive of the thought that Krishna may have killed him. Why? Because then they could not love him so intimately and freely. Yogamaya preserved the madhurya ras, the sweetness of the loving relations between the devotees and Lord Krishna. Trinavarta represents the anarta, the demon that plagues the heart, in the form of false pride due to scholarship. Krishna has six opulences. One is knowledge. When we get a little speck of that opulence in our own heart, just a little infinitesimal speck, and we become learned, it's very attractive. And people start to listen to us. Yes? And then they start respecting us. And then they start honoring us. And they may even touch our feet. Vivo! In this way, we begin to think that I am knowing more than others. I am better than others. And we start enjoying that position. In the Christian scripture, St. Paul said, pride cometh before the fall. It is very important to cultivate transcendental knowledge. But Maya is so clever and so powerful. Even if we're cultivating knowledge of the scriptures, she can make us proud of that. And the very knowledge that we're trying to cultivate to overcome Maya overcomes us. Prakrite kriyamanani guna karmani sarvasya ahankara iti ame ahankara vimudatma karataham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul thinks him or herself to be the doer of activities, but actually it is all being done by nature, and Krishna is the controller of nature. Krishna is the sarva karana karanam. He is the cause of all causes. It is said, do not be proud of borrowed plumes. Whatever knowledge we have is Krishna's. It is not ours. So yes, we have seen people learn a lot and then they start thinking themselves superior to others. And then Krishna is not pleased with anything you do or speak. It's all just superficial, external, without substance. So especially for devotees, this is very, very important. We should never be falsely proud of our scholarship. Rupan Sanatan Goswami, we have been discussing them over the last few days. They were the greatest scholars. But yet, they were more humble than a blade of grass. They never considered themselves to be better than anyone. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is such a scholar. Rupan Sanatan Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, they awarded him the title Kaviraj, the king of poets. Can you imagine getting a title from them? And yet he's thinking he's lower than the worm and stool, more fallen than Jagai and Madhai. If we know by memory all the Vaishnava scriptures, if we really understand what we have learned, then we will never consider ourselves better than even the illiterate sweeper of the street who's doing it for Krishna. That is realization. That is the Goswamis. That is the footsteps we must follow. There were devotees living in Vrindavan, one particular person. He was a scholar of Sanskrit. He was studying so many literatures. And he actually told Prabhupada, I want to go to somebody else who can teach me something higher. Can I have your blessing? And Prabhupada, with all humility, told him the reality. He said, you are asking me to give you a blessing to go to hell. What is the use of all this scholarship? And that person left and went to somebody else, and now he's an atheist. He was a Sanskrit scholar who was studying profusely the literatures of the Goswamis. But because he thought he knew better than his guru, yes, he learned more and more and more and more and more and more and more. Now he's a professor of Sanskrit in a major university in America. But he's an atheist. He doesn't even believe in Krishna. So we cannot be false. When the more we know, the more that demon of Trinavarta makes us think that we're becoming higher and higher and higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. Yes? The more we know, we think we're getting higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. But that's Trinavarta taking off us, our pride. It's our humility, our dedication, and our devotion that bring us higher and higher and higher. And knowledge is meant to facilitate that. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted us to study his books and really learn this philosophy. He wanted us to master the philosophy for our own sake and for the sake of others. But at the same time, he taught us we must always be in the spirit of the menial, humble servant of the servant of the servant. And in this way, we can achieve perfection when we chant the holy name. When Krishna killed these demons in Vrindavan, he did it in such a sweet and intimate way that he did not disturb the prema or the love of the Brijvasis. In fact, due to the anxiety that these demons created in the hearts of the Brijvasis, their love increased. Krishna allowed these demons. It was actually Krishna's Lila Shakti that allowed these demons to come into Vrindavan. Because every time a demon came and Krishna was in danger, the ocean of prema increased and expanded within the hearts of the devotees. Should I continue? Krishna began to crawl in Gokul. So beautiful. On the ground of Braj that was mixed with cow urine and cow dung, actually made muddy, Krishna and Balaram would crawl around. And they would crawl with their arms, and they looked like two little snakes crawling through the mud of Braj. In fact, this mud of the dust, the cow urine and the cow dung, was like a beautiful ornamentation which was always dressing Krishna and Balaram. And their mothers put little bells on their ankles so their mothers could easily find them. They were very, very restless. Sometimes they would see an older gopi walking, and Krishna Balaram would think, that this is Rohini, this is Yashoda. And they'd crawl through the mud. They'd crawl to get to their mother. And they'd their ankle bells, and they'd hear the ankle bells of the gopis, and they were thinking, this is my mother, this is my mother, and they're coming. And then the gopi would see and look, and they'd see, it's not their mother. And they'd become very much afraid and cry and try to crawl the other direction until they would find Yashoda and Rohini. And they would pick them up and embrace them and pacify them with their love. When they would be looking at Krishna and Balaram's beautiful faces, they would see little tiny teeth that looked like drops of milk just starting to form in their lotus-like mouths. Yashoda and Rohini would, with their fingers, they would count the teeth and discuss with each other. Krishna's Kumar Lila. A little calf would be laying on the ground. Actually, two calves. Two calves would be sitting, laying next to each other on the ground, sleeping. And then little Krishna Balaram, they would crawl up to the calf, because they hadn't learned how to walk yet. They would crawl up to the calf, and Krishna would grab the tail of one, and Balaram would grab the tail of the other, and then the calves would become very afraid. And they'd get up and start running, and Krishna and Balaram would be so afraid, they'd be holding on and crying, and the calves would be running, and children would be crying, holding on, and the gopis would drop everything they were doing. They would just leave behind all their responsibilities and come running out and watch Krishna and Balaram being dragged through the mud and the cow dung and the cow urine of Braj by the calves, and they would all be laughing. This was the life of soul. Hundreds and billions and trillions of quadrillions of times better than the best Hollywood film. Just seeing and hearing about Krishna and Balaram's beautiful pastimes. And the gopis would save Krishna and stop the calves and take Krishna and Balaram and bring them to Yashoda, and they'd feed them milk and they'd be satisfied. Sometimes the cowherd men would test Krishna's intelligence to see how he was becoming learned. And Nanda Maharaj, Upananda, the uncles of Krishna especially, they would like to do this. Upananda, Abhinanda, they'd say, "Oh Gopal, point to your head." And he'd point to his head. They say, "Point to your leg." He'd point to his leg. Krishna was very proud. He knew all these things. Point to your nose, and Krishna very proudly would point to his nose. Point to your ears, and Krishna wanted to show how he's learned so much. He'd point to his ear. He'd say, "Point to your teeth." And Krishna would say, "But I don't have any teeth yet." In this way, Krishna would give so much happiness to the residents of Vrindavan. But Yashoda and Rohini were always in anxiety. Transcendental anxiety. Because they were always thinking, when Krishna and Balaram are crawling around Braj, there is the horns of the cows and the bulls that may stab them, and there's the teeth of dogs, and there's thorns and the bushes and the grounds, and there's the nails of the monkeys. Day and night, Yashoda and Rohini were in anxiety about Krishna and Balaram's welfare. And Krishna and Balaram went through every possible effort to increase their anxieties by their naughtiness. Now, this material world is Kunta, the place of anxiety. And beyond this material existence is Vaikuntha, which means no anxiety. So how is that the highest planet of all the Vaikunthas, the highest people, Yashoda and Rohini, are always in anxiety? This is not material anxiety. The anxiety of Yashoda and Rohini was their total absorption in Vatsalya Ras, in their parental loving affection for Krishna and Balaram. And the more the anxiety, the more it increased the intensity of their love. This is absorption on the spiritual platform. It is billions and trillions, unlimitedly more blissful state than Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Sometimes I see our devotees chant this during fire yajnas. And I understand that's part of the ceremony. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Especially in marriages, I hear this. It just doesn't make sense to me. They really want Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Then why are they getting married? Living with a wife or a husband, you know, I have so much anxiety. And then they have children, too much anxiety. And all the parents are always thinking, I have so much anxiety with this child. I love my child, but it's so much anxiety. I can't wait till they grow up a little more and there'll be more or less anxiety. Now I have to hold, but when they start to crawl, then less anxiety. Then when they start to walk, there'll be less. Then they go to school. But actually, that's illusory energy. We're always thinking tomorrow, shanti, shanti, shanti. With every stage of a child's development, there's more intense, complex anxieties. Yes? No, the anxiety of they want milk. They're crying. It's a little anxiety. But wait till they start becoming teenagers. There you go. So yes, but when the object of our anxiety is Krishna, out of love, that is ecstasy. Prabhupada taught us that we should put ourselves in situations where we are in great anxiety for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will bring about purification and ecstasy. Because after all, our happiness is in pleasing Krishna, and Krishna's happiness, his happiness is in our absorption to serve him, to please him. We have here Guru Charan Prabhu, who is the president of Prabhupadation Italy. So many anxieties there, I have seen. And we have Radhe Shyam Prabhu, the president of Pune. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Much louder, please. So many anxieties he has to deal with. They don't have to take these responsibilities. So, Samek Rishi, he's president of Tovako Temple in New Jersey. So many of our devotees here have accepted positions where anxieties are just constantly piling upon them. But that anxiety is so pleasing to the Lord because it's being tolerated and accepted in His service. It's an expression of love. So yes, Yashoda and Rohini were always in great anxiety, worrying for Krishna's protection at every moment. Krishna would try to walk. This is a very important pastime. Krishna is the ability in man, but in his original form, in Goloka, in Gokula, he's learning how to walk. And he gets up right here in the dust of Braj, in Mahavan. Krishna would somehow stand up with his own legs, and he'd take a step and fall down and cry. And then he'd try to get up and take another step and fall down and cry. And Yashoda Mai, she wanted to help Krishna to learn to walk. She would hold him by his little finger like this, and she'd help him get up, and she'd walk with him. And because she was only touching his little finger like this, holding him up, Krishna was thinking that he was walking. But he understood he was completely depending on the help of his mother. And then that beautiful face, which was like a wilted lotus from his crying, blossomed into a most beautiful smile as he looked upon his mother, who was helping to teach him how to walk. The first thing Krishna did when he learned the art of walking was begin his pastimes of stealing butter. Shall I continue? One day the gopis came together to approach Mother Yashoda. Their purpose was just to hear and speak about beautiful Gopal's glorious pastimes. One gopi complained to Yashoda that before dawn, little Gopal and his friends, they inspect the village of Braj just to see where the butter and yogurt is so that they could steal it later in the day. Another gopi said, early in the morning, before we milk the cows, Krishna and his friends, they let go of all the calves. They untie them from the ropes, and the calves go running outside, and we go running, chasing after them. Come back, come back, come back. And while everyone in our families and all of our homes are out chasing the calves, they run into our homes and steal all of our butter. And when we come back, the pots are broken, and all the butter is gone, or all over the floor. Another gopi said, sometimes he unties the calves before we milk the cows and brings the calves to the cows to drink all the milk. So when our husbands go to milk the cows, they come back with empty buckets because it's all gone. A few gopis came together and lodged this complaint. This was serious. We found Krishna in our house. He cracked open the clay pot that held the butter, and he was eating the butter. We caught him. We said, we're going to beat you. We're going to tie you up. And Krishna smiled at us. When Krishna smiled upon us, our hearts melted. We were so captivated, so charmed, so spellbound by his smile that we stood like motionless statues, unable to move. And right in front of our eyes, Krishna and his cowherd boys just ate all of our butter and all of our yogurt. He had no power to even take a step. What is the power of your son's smile? He showed him, I asked, well, why don't you just feed him if you think he's hungry? If his belly is empty, just give him some food. And the gopis replied that if we do give him food,
He doesn't want it. If we give him butter, he won't accept it. Your son has a taste for stealing. One day, your Gopal, before he ate the butter himself, was feeding it to all the monkeys in our house. And he fed so much butter to monkeys, the monkeys became so full, they went away. And then Gopal said, I don't want to eat this butter all alone. My friends have all left me. I haven't eaten yet. Monkeys, come back. But the monkeys went out into the trees. So Krishna became very angry. It's no fun eating butter all alone. And he broke all of our pots and threw all the butter on the floor in anger. Sometimes to protect our butter from Gopal and his friends, we keep it hanging from ropes from the rafters on our ceiling. But they will put boxes and they will climb on top of those. Or sometimes they will climb on top of a box and then climb on each other's shoulders to somehow reach that butter. And if we put it in such a way that even that doesn't work, Krishna has a special stick that has a pointed metal end. And he'll get on the top of his friend's shoulders and he'll poke the bottom of the butter pot, make a hole, and the butter will start flowing from that butter pot. And then he'll take his friends and put their face and open their mouths so the butter falls right into their open mouths. Sometimes when we see Krishna stealing our yogurt and butter, we say, Krishna, you are a thief. And Krishna looks at us indignant and says, no, you are a thief. Sometimes when we hide our butter so nicely that Krishna cannot find it, he will pinch our babies and make them cry. Or sometimes he'll go into the cleanest place in our house where we do our worship and he'll pass stool and urine. But now, look at him. He's hearing us lodging these complaints. He appears so innocent and fearful that we may punish him. Just look, but we know what's in his mind. He's only planning the next strategy of how to steal our butter and yogurt. And when Krishna understood that he was caught, he would smile. And when Krishna would smile, Yashodamai and the gopis could not possibly chastise him. All they could do is smile. Here in the house of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna was once in a secluded place with his hand in a butter pot. And he saw there was a jeweled pillar. And in the jewels was the reflection of himself. But Krishna was thinking that someone's watching him. So he became very much afraid. He trembled. And he said, my dear brother, please do not tell my mother. If you don't tell my mother, I will share my butter with you. And it is very good. You will enjoy it a lot. And then he would continue eating the butter and eating the butter. Meanwhile, Mother Yashoda was watching this whole thing. She was so pleased to hear the broken words of her son. She very innocently and slowly walked forward. And when Krishna saw Mother Yashoda, he became very much afraid. There was butter in his mouth, there was butter in his hands, there was butter on the floor. And Krishna said, I didn't steal the butter, I didn't steal it. It's that greedy boy over there. And he pointed to his reflection. He said, he's very greedy. He came here to steal this butter. And I told him, no, you cannot steal my mother's butter. And we had an argument, but he stole it anyway. I became angry at him, and he became angry at me. But I'm not greedy for butter, mother. Another time Yashodamai came and there was butter on his face and his hand was stuck right in the butter pot.
And Krishna said, Mother, Mother, I'm not stealing butter. She said, then what are you doing? He said, you put these bangles on my hands that have rubies, and the heat of the rubies are burning my hands, burning them. It's unbearable. I've stuck them in the butter just to relieve the pain. And Mother Yashoda took his hand and looked. She was so enchanted by his cleverness. She said, oh, Gopal, look, your hands really are burnt. I will never put these ruby bangles on you again. And she kissed his hands with great motherly affection. It was a full moon night. On this full moon night, Mother Yashoda was with her gopi friends. And little Gopal came out into the courtyard and cried. He was crying with hunger. Hunger for his mother's love. So Mother Yashoda, she entrusted Krishna to the other gopis. And the gopis asked Gopal, why are you crying? What's the problem? And he pointed to the full moon and cried out, I want to eat that freshly churned condensed butter. And Gopi said, but that is not freshly churned condensed butter. He said, well, what is it? The Gopi said, it is Rajahamsa. It is the king of all swans that is swimming across the sky. And Krishna just pointed and said, I want Rajahamsa. I want to play with him. Give him to me. Give him to me. I want him. Give him to me now. I want to play with him. He kept crying. They said, it's not Rajahamsa. It's Chandra. It's the moon. He said, well, I want to play with it. I want to play with it. Give it now, now. They couldn't pacify him. Then Yashoda Mai came and placed little Gopal on her lap. And she said, yes, Krishna, what that is in the sky is freshly churned condensed butter. But you cannot eat it. And Gopal said, why can't I eat it? I want it. She said, because it is covered with spots of poison. I said, why is that? He said, I will tell you about this freshly churned butter. It has come from the Kshirasara, the ocean of milk. Krishna asked, Mother, how many cows did it take to fill an ocean of milk? Yashoda Mai replied that the one who gave cows the ability to give milk is the one who filled the ocean. He doesn't need cows. And Gopal asked, who is that, Mother? Who is that? And she said, the Lord of creation. She said, long ago, the demigods and the demons came together to this ocean of milk to churn it. And Krishna became very excited. He said, did they churn it the same way you and the gopis churn milk? And she said, yes, they churned it the same way with the churning rod. And as they churned it, out from it came Kalakuta, a deadly poison. Krishna said, poison? Poison like what snakes have? And Yashoda Mai said, actually, the reason why snakes are poisonous is because they drank a few drops of that deadly poison. Krishna said, please tell me more, Mother. Please tell me more. And Yashoda Mai said, this poison was so bad that it was going to destroy everyone. And then Mahadev, Lord Shiva, came and he drank that poison just to save humanity. But a few drops spilled out, and this freshly churned condensed butter that is in the sky it is spotted with that poison. Therefore, you cannot take it, Gopal. Better you take the freshly churned condensed butter that I have made for you today. Krishna was convinced, and he took his mother's butter, and then late at night, he very peacefully fell asleep. One day, the wife of Upananda, Prabhavati, she came to Yashodamai and complained that Gopal's always stealing our butter. He's always stealing our yogurt. He's always creating messes in our houses. What we should understand is this, that the only reason the gopis churned their butter, milked their cows, or did anything was the hope that Krishna would come to steal it. That was their life and soul. Their lives would be empty and meaningless if Krishna didn't come to their house and steal their offerings. Krishna's the supreme proprietor of everything that exists. He is not a thief like an ordinary thief in this world. If you steal somebody else's property, you are sinful and you have to pay karma. But Krishna owns everything. Anybody who thinks anything is theirs is a thief. Because everything belongs to Krishna. Sarvalokamaheshwaram. Only because the gopis' hearts are completely pure with the exclusive motivation of giving pleasure to Krishna does Krishna come to accept their love in the form of their butter and yogurt. His stealing from the house of the gopis was their ultimate joy in life. And just to completely immerse their consciousness in remembering this day and night, they would complain. So Prabhavati Devi, she said to Yashoda, how Krishna regularly comes to my house and does this stealing, Makanchor. And Yashoda Mai said, well, next time he does it, you catch him and you bring him home to me. She said, all right, I will do that. So Krishna came to her house the very next day. And she caught him by the hand and said, I'm going to bring you to your mother. And little Gopal, in his very sweet, broken voice, said, you will regret this if you do. She said, no, I'm going to report you to your mother. I caught you red-handed. Come. And she's pulling Krishna very lovingly. And Krishna, and as they came before Yashoda, Krishna hid under the cloth of her sari. And Prabhavati Devi said, I caught Krishna today with my own hands and eyes. I have caught him. He was stealing our butter, and I have brought him to you. And Yashoda Mai said, oh, my Gopal has stolen butter. Well, where is he? She said, he's right here. She said, well, where? And she saw Krishna was hiding under her sari. So she lifted her sari and said, here he is. And Yashoda Mai looked and said, that's not Gopal. And Prabhavati looked down, and it was her own son. No, the son is very nice. It's all right. She saw her own son. She was absolutely bewildered. And Yashoda Mai said, I think you, just like you are expecting me to discipline Krishna, I think you should learn to discipline your own son. She didn't know what to do. She was speechless. She just said to her son, let's go home. And she was walking home, holding the hand of her son. And when they were just down the road a piece, she felt a pulling. And she looked down.
And it was Krishna. He was smiling. And Krishna said, you should never do that again. He said, if you ever do this again, try to report me to my mother like this. Next time, I will take the form of your husband. Close to this place is Brahmanda out. It was there at Brahmandagat that a wonderful pastime took place. The Vatsalya fault-finding of the gopis have now been concluded. So now the friends of Krishna were coming to Yashoda to complain against him. Now Krishna's friends could not complain about his stealing butter because they were helping him in those pastimes. But one day, the gopas and Balaramji came before Mother Yashoda and lodged a very, very serious complaint. We have seen Krishna in a secluded place eating dirt. Oh, Yashoda Mai's heart was so disturbed, so frightened with the welfare of her child. With her right hand, she held Krishna's hand so that he couldn't run away. And she chastised him. Why have you eaten dirt? Why are you eating dirt? Don't you know that dirt is not good for your health? I'm feeding you so many nice things. Why are you doing like this? And Krishna said that I have not eaten dirt. Now this scolding of Mother Yashoda to Krishna is something so wonderful. Yashoda Mai is scolding that person who Brahma, Shiva, Indra, all the demigods and all the scriptures and all the saints of all the religions throughout all the universes, they are all praising him and glorifying him, and Mother Yashoda is scolding him. That scolding is not a fault. Because Mother Yashoda's scolding Krishna nourishes the prema, the love, in her heart and in Krishna's heart. Krishna became very fearful. His eyes were very restless. And this fear in Krishna's eyes is an ornament caused by the love of Yashoda. Krishna said, I did not steal butter. I did not eat dirt. I'm sorry. I did not eat any dirt, Mother. And Mother Yashoda said, then why are all your friends complaining that you did? Even Balaram is saying that you ate dirt. If Balaram and all your friends are telling you me, then it must be true. Why would they tell a lie against you? And Krishna said, they are liars, my mother. They are liars. If you don't believe me, then you look in my mouth. Now, for children, to tell lies like this is very natural. And when Krishna speaks these lies, it nourishes the love, the Vatsalya Bhav of his mother. Vatsalya Bhav and all other rasas spring from prema or from pure love. That prema rests within the heart of a devotee. And it arises because of Krishna's intimate affection for his devotees. This is a very, very deep secret of what bhakti really is. When Krishna manifests his affection for the devotee, then that causes the love on his devotee to rise, to increase, and to manifest in extraordinary ways. And Krishna's affection for his devotees
is why he is called Bhakta Vatsal. And our beloved Acharyas explain of all Krishna's qualities, his quality of Bhakta Vatsal is the greatest. It is the crest jewel of all qualities. Because it is his affection for his devotees that brings about the pleasure of all of their loving exchange.
Because Krishna's line, manifestation of his Bhakta Vatsal, Krishna's lines is the crest jewel of all great qualities. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. Yashoda Mai said, Gopal, open your mouth. Now this was a difficult situation because the fact is Krishna did eat dirt. And he was thinking in his mind, if I open my mouth,
Yashoda Mai is going to see dirt in it. So I have to do something fast. So while Krishna was thinking like this, his Aishwarya Shakti just entered into his body. And he opened his mouth, and Yashoda Mai looked inside. Through his mouth and into his belly, she saw the universal creation. Mother Yashoda saw mountains and oceans and planets and demigods. She saw all living beings. She even saw herself looking in Krishna's mouth. She saw the entire universal creation, both inside Krishna's belly and mouth, as well as outside. When Yashoda Mai saw this, she became very worried. She was thinking, is Krishna sick? Is this some illness? What's happening to him? And then as she looked deeper into it, she became very much perplexed. She thought, am I dreaming? No, I can't be dreaming because my eyes are open. Or am I under an illusion? No. Why would the demigods put an insignificant person like me into an illusion? Or is my mind, am I having some mental disorder? She's saying, no, my mind is quite stable. I know what the solution to this mystery is. That my child has mystic potencies. Garga Muni has told us that he will have great powers like that of Narayan. But then she contemplated, how is this possible? Mystic potencies like Narayan. When he's hungry, he cries. When he's thirsty, he cries. When there's lightning in the sky and thunder, he'll come running to me crying, and unless I embrace him and give him shelter, he'll find no hope. He's naughty. He's innocent. And in this way, she completely rejected this nonsense propaganda of Garga Muni, that Krishna has great powers like Narayan. So therefore, your Mother Yashoda seeing the universe in Krishna's mouth had no answer. So what does a great devotee do when they cannot understand a particular situation? She just completely immersed her heart in prayer to Lord Narayan. Please protect my child. She prayed that, Lord Narayan, let me surrender to you. You are the cause of all causes. You are the very source of all that exists. Everything is emanating from you. And ultimately, you are the only maintainer of all living beings. Due to Maya, due to illusion, I have been thinking that I am the wife of Nanda Maharaj. Due to Maya, I am thinking that I am the Brajeshwari. I am the queen of Vrindavan. And all the gopis and all the gopas and all the cows and all the calves are under my care. Due to illusion, I am thinking that All of this is my, all of these 900,000 cows are my property. But actually, they all belong to you, Lord Vishnu. Everything is yours. You are the only proprietor. You are the only maintainer. And you are the only shelter of everyone. Please. I am under the illusion that Krishna is my son. I am under the illusion that I can protect Krishna. But Lord Vishnu, it is only your mercy that can protect him. Please, please protect him. When Krishna saw Mother Yashoda in this mood, he was unhappy. He thought in his heart, if she's thinking like this, that Krishna, that Vishnu is my protector, and that Vishnu is my shelter, then who will cuddle me? And who will embrace me? And who will kiss me and protect me? As soon as he thought like this, Mother Yashoda became so overwhelmed with parental affection that she completely forgot everything that she saw in Krishna's mouth. Just like you have a dream at night, and when you wake up in the morning, you completely forget your dream. Krishna closed his mouth and smiled upon Yashoda Mai, and she just embraced, kissed him, and gave him the milk from her breast. If I do not feed Krishna, how will he live? Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki. Mother Yashoda was blinded by prem, by pure love. Actually, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains that one of the reasons Krishna manifested the universal form in his mouth was because there was also dirt in it. So he had to do something so incredible to make his mother forget about the dirt that was actually in his mouth too. Because not only was the dirt in his mouth from Brahmandagat, but the whole universe was in his mouth. So in this way, Mother Yashoda forgot all about looking for the dirt, and thus Krishna did not get in any trouble on that day. Shukadev Goswami explains, he who the three Vedas worship as Yajna Purusha, he who the Sankhya Shastras worship as Purusha, he who the Yoga Sutras worship as Paramatma, he who the Pancharatriki scriptures worship as Bhagavan. Mother Yashoda considered an ordinary child. She was thinking, by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna is my son. People think that because Garga Muni said that he will have great powers like Narayan, and people think that because he has killed some demons, that he's some great personality. But I know better. If Krishna doesn't see me even for a moment, he's greatly disturbed. He's so much depending on me. And if I don't see Krishna for even a moment as his mother, I'm greatly disturbed. Experience is the proof that Krishna is just an ordinary child. And my son, completely depending on my motherly love. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. Krishna could not fully reciprocate with Mother Yashoda's selfless, pure love. Therefore, Krishna remained a debtor. And in that position, where he was happily a debtor, he remained completely dependent on Mother Yashoda and would cry for her milk. One day, a fruit vendor came here to Gokul Mahavan. And she had a basket of fruits that she would carry from place to place. And she cried out very loudly, "Does anyone want to buy any fruits? I am selling fruit today. Anyone who would like fruit, please come." So little Gopal, he was very eager to get fruit. So he just took a handful of grains to barter for the fruit from his mother's stock of grains. And he went running through the dust of Braj. And he came to the fruit vendor. She looked at him. His beauty, his charm, the merciful glance that he cast upon her completely captivated her heart. And Krishna held out. And because his fingers were so small, practically every single grain already had fallen from between his fingers. There was only just one or two grains left. And he just smiled and in a very sweet, innocent voice cried out, "Please give me some fruits." The fruit vendor fell in love with this child and filled his hands with as many fruits as it would hold. And although Krishna's hands were so small, because she was offering these fruits with pure love, somehow or other, those little tiny hands were able to hold a lot of fruits. She turned around and looked into her basket, and it was overflowing with diamonds and pearls and rubies and emeralds and gold. But most of all, her heart was overflowing with the crest jewel of all valuable golds. Prema Bhakti. This ordinary fruit vendor received the highest gift, which is unavailable even to the great yogis, ascetics, and the devatas, simply because she gave a few little fruits with love and devotion. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Bhagavad Gita explains to us in this way, that one who offers to me a flower, a fruit, or a little water, or a leaf with devotion, I will accept it. That is the ultimate success of all endeavors, that Krishna will accept our offering. Krishna accepts the purpose in which everything is offered to him. Duryodhana offered a magnificent feast with gifts of gold, silver, jewels, on silver plates, all ready to be offered to Krishna. But he did not even look in that direction. But Vidura and his wife, even a banana peel, Krishna accepted as the most ambrosial nectar because of the purpose in which it was offered. And what is that purpose? Samsadir Hari Toshima. To please Krishna. That is the only goal of our life. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janamani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rahoite kitvai. These temporary, frivolous things of the world are of no real importance. We will accept whatever we can use in the service of Guru and the Vaishnavas. Otherwise, we don't have any concern for anything else. We don't want wealth, we don't want position, we don't want power, we don't want recognition, we don't want sex, we don't want any of these things. They're all just a disturbance, a distraction, unless they can be utilized in Krishna's service. If we please Krishna, our life is perfect. If we don't please Krishna, we have wasted. We have wasted our life.
The simple fruit vendor attained
the supreme perfection simply by giving her fruits with simple love. And it is explained in the Bhagavatam that this fruit vendor was a Pulinda. That means she was an uneducated, illiterate aborigine. She was not one of the gopas or gopis. She was just an outcast forest dweller. Aborigine woman. No caste. No education, no prestige, nothing. But she attained the ultimate goal of life simply because she offered the fruit of her love to Krishna. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki. Today is Deepavali. So now I will begin the class. We have thus concluded the introduction to today's class. Shall I begin class at this point? One day, on the day of Deepavali, Yashodamai rose very early in the morning. The reason is, before Krishna woke up, she wanted to have very nice, delicious butter for him to eat. Yashodamai went through great efforts so that Krishna would have the most delicious and nutritious possible milk, yogurt, ghee, and butter. Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows. You could say countless cows. Of them, there were 7 or 8 which were the best of all the Kamadhenu cows. Yashodamai would personally grow a very, very delicious, nutritious, soft, tender grass called Padmaganda. And these 7 or 8 best cows would only be fed this Padmaganda grass. This grass had fragrance so sweet that it intoxicated one who would even smell. With that Padmaganda milk, Yashodamai would make yogurt, and that morning she was personally churning the Padmaganda yogurt for Krishna. Previously, she had some of her assistants to churn, because it's a very simple job. But she was thinking that my Gopal is not satisfied with the yolk, with the butter at our house. Somehow, he's always going to neighbor's house to steal butter. So with all of her love and devotion, she was churning the butter. As she was churning, she was feeling deep separation from Gopal. And thus, just to pacify her separation in great joy, she sang beautiful, beautiful songs about Gopal's leelas. In Vrindavan, every day, whatever pastimes Krishna did, the gopis and gopas would put it into poetry and song so that they could remember it all day long. And Prabhupada explains, this is a traditional and very effective way of remembering things, to put it into song, in poetry. Because after all, sitting through long lectures like today, very difficult to keep your attention, is it not? I'm sorry about that. But singing and dancing, everybody enjoys. And when we want to remember something very nicely, even with children, this is a universal principle. How did we learn the alphabet? I don't know how you did it, but when I learned alphabet when I was smaller than I am now, actually, I don't even know if I still remember the alphabet. But they put it into song, yes, because children remember songs. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. You know, if they just, teachers say A, B, B, C, C, D. But they teach it in a fun, happy way. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. Put it into song and you learn very nicely. It's easy to remember. So the Brijabasis, everything Krishna did, they would make beautiful poetry and beautiful songs so that they can day and night always remember Krishna. So Yashoda Mai was singing beautiful songs about Krishna's Leela as she was churning the butter, and because she was singing so sweetly, the bangles on her wrists were like karatals, keeping in time with the kirtan. As she was singing Krishna's glory, Yashoda Mai had a beautiful saffron yellow colored sari. And as she was churning, she began to perspire. And the malati flowers which were in her hair, they were thinking that Yashoda Mai has so much love. So much love. What are we doing on her head? We should fall at her feet. So thus the flowers fell from her head and fell onto her feet. And as she was churning the butter, singing the glories of Krishna, in her motherly love, her breast began to offer profuse milk. Now when milk started coming from Yashoda Mai, and she was chanting his names, Krishna, who was in the next room sleeping, woke up. He woke up hungry for his mother's love. Krishna came, and with one hand he held the churning rod to tell his mother that enough with this churning. I will not allow you to continue. And with the other hand, he pulled on her sari and looked at her to tell her that he was hungry for her milk. Mother Yashoda smiled upon him, and she embraced him, placed him on her lap, and fed him the milk of her love. At that time, she heard that on the stove, the milk was boiling over. That was not ordinary milk. That was Padmaganda milk from the best of the cows. And she was preparing a nice preparation for Krishna's breakfast. So she put Krishna's down and ran to save the milk for Krishna's pleasure. But Krishna became very angry. And with his upper teeth, he bit his lower lip. Jiva Goswami explains that his white teeth represent the mode of goodness and his red lip represent passion. So we must curb our passionate mood with the mode of goodness. Not that Krishna is like that, but he's teaching us a lesson. He bit his lip and he was angry. And he wanted to demonstrate his anger to his mother. So while his mother was away, Krishna picked up a stone and cracked the pot of yogurt that Yashoda Mai was churning. And then he ran into the next room. He went into the next room and he saw hanging from the ceiling by ropes was a pot of butter. So he took that butter. He took that butter. And then he went just outside. There was a turned over wooden grinding mortar. And he sat on that mortar with the pot of butter. It was feeding it to the monkeys and eating it simultaneously. Yashodamai, after saving the milk, she came back, and there was no Gopal, but there was a big mess. The clay pot was broken, there was a stone there, and she smiled. I know who has done this. It is my Gopal. This is the work of my son. So she followed the butter footprints of Gopal. She followed one butter footprint after another, after another, after another. Then she saw from the rasters the pot was gone, and she continued to follow the footprints, and there she saw from a little distance Gopal on the top of an upside-down wooden grinding mortar feeding butter to monkeys. But while he was doing it, his eyes were moving around very fearful, terrified that his mother might catch him. Yashodamai picked up a stick and very quietly walked. Suddenly, the monkey saw her. They all started jumping out windows and running outdoors. And Krishna was looking very fearfully. What's happening? He looked, and there he saw his mother right behind him, holding a stick. Gopal, whose eyes were very restless, jumped off the wooden grinding mortar and ran away. He was running, and she chased after him. But he was running so speedy that she was not able to catch him. But she would not give up her effort, because after all, she must teach her child proper manners, and she must protect him from all dangers. She kept running, and Krishna was running, and she kept running. Even the greatest yogis, through their tapasya and their meditation, cannot catch Krishna. Even the greatest scholars or jnanis cannot catch Krishna by their high learning. As Yashodamai was running, she was perspiring. And the flowers on her hair started jumping off. There were two different groups of flowers. One was on Yashodamai's side, and one was on Krishna's side. Those on Yashodamai's side were thinking that Yashodamai, out of her motherly love, wants to catch Krishna, but she can't catch him. Maybe because of the excess weight of us on her head, we're slowing her down. So they jumped off of her head just to make her lighter and faster. But those flowers who are on Krishna's side, they were thinking, she wants to catch Krishna. She wants to bind up Krishna. I'm not going to be a part of this conspiracy. So they jumped off. Ultimately, Yashodamai caught Krishna. Yashodamai chastised him. She said, "Oh, friend of the monkeys, oh, breaker of pots, oh, butter thief, today I'm going to teach you a good lesson, and I'm going to bind you up." And then she showed Krishna the stick. She was holding Krishna's hand and she wouldn't let go. Krishna was trying to get away, but he couldn't get away. And Krishna became more and more and more afraid. And he admitted, he said, Mother, please, don't hit me with that stick. Please don't hit me with that stick. Now, Mother Yashoda never would touch Krishna with stick. But just to teach him a lesson, she would just raise it and show it to him. Krishna said, "Please put down this stick. Please put down this stick." And Yashodamai said, "If you don't want to be beaten with the stick, then why did you steal butter?" And Gopal said, "I promise. I did it. I know. Yes, I did it. I have done this bad thing.
But I promise you, Mother, I will never, ever, ever do it again. I'll never do it again, Mother. I'll never do it again. But please put down that stick. So when Yashoda Mai saw that Krishna was trembling at the stick of Yashoda, she threw the stick away. Meanwhile, Krishna was crying. Profuse tears were flowing from his eyes, and they were mixing with the black kajal and making beautiful ornamental streaks of black on Krishna's lotus-like form. His breathing was very quick. His lips were trembling. In fact, all of his limbs were trembling in fear of Mother Yashoda. Queen Kunti remembered this incident many years later when Krishna was Dwarkadish, the king of Dwarka. He was about to leave Hastinapur back for his own home after coronating Yudhisthira Maharaj as the king. And Queen Kunti was praying for Krishna to never leave her. Vipada shantuta shashva tatra tatra jagat guru. Whenever we were in a calamity, you always were there to save us. Let those calamities happen again and again and again so we can always remember you, because in remembering you, we never have to see death. Queen Kunti was remembering in that occasion the inconceivable glory of Krishna, how he is conquered by the love of his devotee. Krishna, although you are feared by fear personified, you are afraid of your mother. You're weeping and trembling, and heart is beating very quickly out of fear of Yashoda. And please understand that Krishna is not just pretending to be like this to put on a nice show for us to speak about at Mahabhan. Krishna was actually in that state under the control of the love of his mother. That is his supreme opulence. That he is, although he is the Almighty, he is controlled by the love of his devotee. So Mother Yashoda threw away the stick. And she said to Krishna that now I must teach you a good lesson. I have other things to do in the house today. I am going to bind you to this wooden grinding mortar. And Mother Yashoda took this rope, which was meant to tie the calves. She was going to use it to tie her own calf. Now, how could you bind Krishna? Because the Supreme Personality of God, it has no beginning and he has no end. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's inside and outside of everything. There's no external or internal. There's no front or rear. He's all-pervading. He's in and out of everything. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead keeps everyone within the entire material existence bound by the ropes of the three modes of material nature. So how can Yashoda Mai bind Krishna with her little rope? Bind that person who has everyone bound by the ropes of the three gunas. But out of her motherly affection, she wrapped the rope around Krishna's waist. And she found that it was two fingers too short. So she tied more rope to that original rope. It was two fingers too short. more rope and more rope and more rope. She was tying all the rope in her whole house. And it was still 2 fingers too short. Why was this happening? Krishna was thinking, as his mother's trying to tie him up. He was thinking, I cannot be bound by these ropes today. I must do my daily duties of stealing butter from the gopis' houses. And I want to play with my friends. Therefore, I will not allow her. So every time she took rope and tied it to the original group of ropes, it was always 2 fingers too small. This is Krishna's vibhuti shakti. He was manifesting his opulences and his satya sankalpa shakti, which is the energy that he has that fulfills all of his desires. It was not his desire to be bound by Yashoda. Therefore, the vibhuti shakti created such a situation that even though she got more and more and more and more rope, and his waist was not growing in any way, it was always 2 fingers too small. Meanwhile, Yashoda, Maya, and all the gopis were smiling, watching. This was absolutely amazing. More rope, more rope. What was so amazing about it? Yashoda, Maya was presenting to her gopi friends that what is so amazing about this? That right now, there's over 150 feet of rope. And my son's waist is only the size of my fist. And I can't get the rope around it. And what's even more amazing is however much rope, it's always exactly 2 fingers too short. Mother Yashoda was perspiring. It was very, very serious labor. Whatever remaining flowers were on her hair was falling. And the gopis finally told Yashoda Mai, you cannot, can't you see what's happening? Due to the good fortune that is upon Gopal today, you will not be able to bind him. And Yashoda Mai, she would not accept that. They said, just give up. You can't do it. Can't you see? Every rope in your house is tied together. Just give up this vain attempt. Yashoda Mai, with great determination, she said, even now it is early morning, even if it takes till evening or night, even if I have to gather every rope in all of Braj Bhumi, I am going to find out the extent of my son's waist. And besides that, I must teach him a lesson. Mother Yashoda's efforts melted Krishna's heart. What fills the gap of that 2 fingers too short? 2 fingers. And what are those 2 fingers? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the one finger is parishrama. Parishrama means the devotee's sincere endeavor. The devotee's determination to serve the Lord and please the Lord. Vyavashayatma ka budhir ekeha kuru nandana bahusha ka hinantasya budhayo vyavashaya. Krishna says in Gita, those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. Those who are not, those whose minds are irresolute, their intelligence is many-branched. So if we want to make progress in spiritual life, we must have determination. We must endeavor with bhakti-nishtha, with faith. In the association of devotees, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, avoiding offenses, hearing and chanting sincerely, we develop faith. Faith in the process of bhakti.
And with that faith, no matter what obstacles, no matter what difficulties, we will endeavor like Mother Yashoda. It seemed impossible to bind Krishna. Even all of her friends were saying it's impossible. But she did not give up because of her love for Krishna. I need to do this for Krishna. So that is the first requirement. The first finger is the devotee's very sincere endeavor. And what happens when Krishna sees our endeavor? He reciprocates with Krishna Kripa, his mercy. The endeavor of the devotee and the mercy of the Lord can make us successful to overcome all obstacles and attain the true goal. By the devotee's endeavor and Krishna's mercy, which is the most super excellent of all of his qualities, is his mercy upon his devotees. Krishna is conquered by that combination. Upon seeing Mother Yashoda's fatigue, Krishna showed the whole world that only pure love can bind him. This highest reality, that Krishna is bound and controlled by the love of his devotee, is the Lord's most beautiful ornament. Krishna controls the whole universe, including Brahma, Shiva, Indra, all the planets. But yet, Krishna is under the control of his devotee's love. Krishna's Atmaram, which means he is completely self-satisfied. But yet he's hungry for the milk of Yashoda. Krishna's aptakama, which means all his desires are always fulfilled. But Krishna's always desiring the praying, the love of his devotee. Krishna is the personification of peace. But we find in this story, Krishna becomes very angry. Krishna is the master of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. But here we find that he's stealing butter like a beggar. Krishna's death personified, fear personified. But yet he's crying and trembling in fear of his mother's stick. Krishna can travel faster than the speed of mind. But yet he's caught by Mother Yashoda. Krishna's bliss personified, but he's crying uncontrollably in sorrow. Krishna's all-pervading, but he's bound by the rope of Yashoda Devi. Thus Krishna reveals that he is controlled by bhakti. And this is not an imitation. That is why it is so astonishing. Krishna was tied to the grinding mortar by Mother Yashoda to teach the highest lesson to all the world for all times to come. Bhaktyatvananyayashakya aham vidam vidur. That it is only by undivided devotional service that I can be understood as I am. Yashoda Mai went to perform her duties. Krishna wanted to do another naughty activity. So he crawled. And little child Krishna, who was only at the time about 3 years and 4 months old, he was crawling. And with the rope tied to his belly, Damodar, the wooden grinding mortar was dragging behind him. And he saw 2 huge Arjuna trees that seemed to be reaching to the sky. These trees were thousands and thousands of years old. Krishna crawled right between those trees. The grinding mortar became stuck. And Krishna made one little pull. A tumultuous sound as these trees fell to the ground. And two demigods, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, appeared from these trees. Adipo. Beautiful, effulgent personalities, they offered prayers to Krishna. The story of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, you know, they were sons of Kuvera. That means they had a very high birth. Son of the treasurer of the demigods. They had beautiful bodies, youthful, very intelligent. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shrivira Edamanamata Puman. Queen Kunti said there's four material opulences that are great disqualifications for spiritual life. High birth, physical beauty, knowledge, and beauty. Huh? Beauty, knowledge, high birth, and strength. Huh? Wealth, yes. Sannyasis, we forget this sometimes. Wealth. So they were the sons of the treasurer. They had wealth. They had beautiful demigod bodies. They were the sons of Kuvera. They were very learned in the scriptures and everything. What happens if you have these qualities? The tendency is to become proud. And when you become proud, you cannot help, you cannot feelingly call out the names of God. So, Narada Muni saw their pride. They were in a lake near Kailash, bathing with beautiful ladies, showing off so nicely. And the ladies got out when they saw Narada Muni and dressed themselves, but Nala Kuvera did not even respect a saintly person because they were so proud. So Narada Muni, out of sympathy for them, cursed them that if you like being naked, then stand naked as trees. When they realized that they were in trouble, they begged forgiveness. So Narada Muni, his curse was a blessing. They were trees here in Gokul Mahavan. We're going to go to that place in a few minutes. If I ever end this class. Narada Muni put them in a place where they could personally witness Krishna's Leela. They were standing there in a miserable situation for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, but ultimately they became purified through the process and they got to see Krishna's pastimes in the courtyard of Narada Maharaj and became completely purified. Knowing that Narada Muni has bestowed his mercy upon these two, Krishna delivered them. Whenever a devotee is favorable upon someone, Krishna gives special mercy to that person. And like Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, we may not recognize the fruits of that mercy for some time, but we must have faith. So they surrender to Krishna in pure devotion. And Krishna sent them back to their abode. Meanwhile, the gopas and the gopis came running. And they see Krishna right in between these massive trees. Each one is inches away from his body. They picked, Nanda Maharaj picked up Krishna. Beautiful sight. After this, it is explained, Upananda and the cowherd men met together where they would love to discuss the topics of Krishna. Love to discuss the topics of Krishna. constantly talking about the topics of Krishna. But Upananda was saying that this is a dangerous place, this Gokul Mahabham. For the past 3 years, since we've lived here, Putana, Sakatasura, Trinavarta, and now these big trees are falling. I think we should move to another place where Krishna and Balaram will be more happy and protected. Just across the river Yamuna is the forest of Vrindavan, where there is Govardhan Hill and beautiful, beautiful forest trees and rich pastures for our cows. Thus, as the Labhran offering to Krishna and Balaram, the Vrijabhasis departed from Mahaban to cross Yamuna to the forest of Vrindavan. These are just a few particles, one drop from the unlimited ocean of wonderful historical pastimes that Krishna performs here in Mahaban. Yes, this is the place of his Bal Leela, his Kumara Leela. How we have come here is inconceivable. Sitting in the dust of the cowherd pasture of Mahavan, let us bow our heads and offer our thanks to Srila Prabhupada and pray that by his mercy and the mercy of his devotees that we could genuinely become deeply attached to hearing Krishna's names, his teachings, his pastimes, and his glories. That we can be truly absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Absorbed in hearing and chanting. Absorbed in offering our love through service. Because to the degree we become absorbed in Krishna, we become free from the shackles of illusion. Let this be our prayer. Satyavrat Muni in his Damodarastakam has prayed, I do not want liberation, mystic powers, or even elevation to Vaikuntha. My only prayer is let the childhood pastimes of Lord Krishna be forever enacted in my mind. No other benediction is of any use to me. Let us offer this prayer on this holy day of the Damodar Leela. Thank you very much. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, you could go to Vrindavan, but only stay for a short time and stay always in the association of Srila Sanatana Goswami. And Prabhupada explains very strongly that if we remain in Vrindavan for a long time, especially without very advanced association, then we'll take the Dham to the ordinary, you'll take the Brijabhasis to the ordinary, and you'll make offenses. And instead of making progress by staying in the Dham, it will actually disturb your spiritual progress. So it is recommended, unless one is very, very advanced, one should only come to Vrindavan for a short time and always stay in the association of very sincere and advanced devotees. Unless we have a very specific service to our Guru Maharaj in the Holy Dham. Then in that association, and even then with great caution, we can make great spiritual advancement. Lord Chaitanya told us to Jagadananda Pandit. What is our position? So Jagadananda Pandit came, and he was staying here in Mahaban with Sanatana Goswami. And he would every day, he would go out and do some begging for Madhukari and bring back and share it with Sanatana Goswami. In fact, he would even cook for Sanatana Goswami, do seva. So one day when he was just finishing his cooking, Sanatana Goswami came into the room and he had a turban on. And Jagadananda, oh, it was a saffron turban. He thought, he's wearing Mahaprabhu's turban. He's wearing Mahaprabhu's cloth on his head. He was thinking it was Mahaprabhu's kopan, and he's wearing it on his head. Oh. So he wanted to hear the glories of Lord Chaitanya. He said, oh, Sanatana, who gave you this turban? And Sanatana Goswami said, Mukunda Nanda Saraswati. Jagadananda Pandit got so angry, he picked up a pot and attacked Sanatana Goswami. How dare you put on somebody else beside Lord Chaitanya's remnants on your body? And Lord Sanatana Goswami became very humble. And his heart melted to see the faithfulness and the love that Jagadananda had for Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatana Goswami, in his humility, prayed that I wish I had that type of intensity of love for Lord Chaitanya as you. And when he said this, Jagadananda Pandit became very ashamed, embarrassed. Because previously, Lord Chaitanya... Should I continue? I don't know. I'm going to do it anyway. Previously, Jagadananda Pandit told Sanatana Goswami that you should go to Vrindavan. Because Sanatana Goswami had all these itchy, horrible, pussy, bloody sores on his body, and every day Lord Chaitanya would come to embrace him, and Sanatana Goswami said to Jagadananda Pandit, he said, I've come here for my purification, but I'm becoming ruined. I'm making offenses. Every day Lord Chaitanya embraces me. I can't stop him. And pus and blood and smelly substances go on his body. I'm making too many offenses. What should I do? Jagadananda Pandit said, well, the Lord already said he wanted you to go to Vrindavan, so just go now. So the next time Lord Chaitanya came, Sanatana Goswami tried to run away, and Lord Chaitanya, you can't run away from the Lord. He embraced him, and the blood and the pus was on his body. And Jagadananda said, why do you keep doing this? Jagadananda Pandit gave me good information. He told me that I should go to Vrindavan. Huh? Lord Chaitanya was not happy. He said, who is this Jaga, this impudent neophyte, instructing you? You are fit to be my guru, and he is instructing you? This is impudence. Besides that, the pus and blood that smears on my body, because of my love for you, it smells to me like a mixture of sandalwood, saffron, musk, and a guru. Haribo. And then Lord Chaitanya went to embrace him again, and then his entire disease disappeared. He became golden and healthy and beautiful. Haridas Thakur said, this is your pastime, my Lord. You're the one who gave him the disease. You're the one who kept him in that disease condition, and now you have cured him just to glorify your devotee. So the place where Sanatana Goswami's heart melted and he praised Jagadananda Pandit, that I wish I had such love for Lord Chaitanya as you do. Jagadananda Pandit became very embarrassed. He said, no, you are my guru, but still, you shouldn't wear somebody else's turban. So this Leela and so many others. I told the story yesterday how Sanatana Goswami was living here in Mahaban, and just over there is the bank of Yamuna. He used to see a beautiful boy playing with the other neighboring children. One day, this little boy just enchanted his heart. The whole day, he just watched this little child playing with all the little kids of the neighborhood. And at the end of the day, the boy was going home, and he wanted to see where the boy lived. The boy went right into Madan Mohan's temple, which used to be here. And Sanatan followed him, and there was no one in the temple except the deity. For the pleasure of Sanatan Goswami, Madan Mohan used to play like a little cowherd boy in the forest of Mahaban. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for bringing us here. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. So now you can make your line to the temple and see the beautiful deities of Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Krishna and Balaram. You could even swing Krishna maybe. And from there we'll go to the place of the Damodar Lila. And from there we will go to, from Krishna and Balaram's birthplace, we will go to Srimati Radharani's birthplace in Raval. And then we'll go back to Krishna Balaram temple for Damodar Astakam.